Welcome to the Story Mine. I'm David Bullock, and I'm here with my beautiful co-host,
Kathy Barker.
Today, we're meeting with Doug Woodall, Christine Ireland, Ked Kirkham, Richard Clegg, Appio Hunter, and Kelly Albrecht, with special sound effects by Justin Oliver. Doug, you're all members of the Gay Rights Group.
That's right.
W-R-I-T-E-S. It's a writing group.
And it's associated with Salt Lake Community College's Community Writing Center.
How long have you been with this group?
Oh, probably about 4 years.
If I understand, John Wilkes organized it?
Yes. He was the original mentor of the group. And from there, we've just moved on to different mentors because he wanted to go back to college.
Well, you have a story?
I do. Learning to Steal by Doug Woodall. Many years ago, on a sunny spring day, I sat on the back steps of my church, the church I went to, with a handful of my friends to learn from Clark, one of the kids who lived next door to me, an incredible truth. Anyone in this world can get whatever he or she wants for nothing. This includes candy, food, a car, a boat, and even money. I was introduced to this truth when I was in third grade. I can still see the scene. That day, Clark, the other kids, and I met in the schoolyard to walk home together. The best route was through the back gate. Here we entered the parking lot of our church. Before we rounded the east end of the building, Clark called us over to a secluded spot on the back steps. He asked us to sit in a half circle. Then he pulled from his pocket small boxes and packages of candy and laid them in front of us. "Where'd you get all that?" someone asked. "From Rexall Drug," Clark said. "Where'd you get the money?" someone else asked. "I didn't have any money." "Then how'd you get it?" "I stole it," Clark said.
"No!
No way!" Back then, I knew what stealing meant, and yet I didn't know. I said to Clark, "You mean you got all that for nothing?" "Yep," Clark said. I was in awe. Here was a concept I'd never taken the time to figure out all the way. If I wanted something, if I needed something, all I had to do was walk into a store and take it. Then think about this. I connected all the dots about what stealing really meant on the back steps of my church. I said to Clark, "Are you going to do it again?" "Yeah, I think so," he said. Can I come with you?" "Sure." We planned to hit Rexall that Saturday. Friday night, when I went to bed, I couldn't fall asleep for several hours. In my mind, I imagined all the things I was going to take. Then I pushed my thoughts into the future. I could see all my life I was going to have everything I ever wanted. I just knew it. Then I had some questions. Why didn't my parents steal? Why didn't my grandparents and uncles and aunts steal? Were they stupid? The next morning, Clark and I met in my front yard with our bikes, and we made a beeline to Rexall. When we got to the store, Clark showed me what I had to do to be a good thief. I could never have imagined how to do it on my own or how easy it was. You see, when you're in a store like Rexall, all you have to do is watch the clerk at the front counter. That's it. Then we were in luck. That day, the woman was half blind. I was sure of it. You see, she had a pair of glasses on a chain that hung around her neck. She only put her glasses on to read. What a vain woman. With that one simple rule, watch the lady at the front counter, I knew Clark and I were going to have Halloween in May. As we filled our pockets, I discovered two more truths about stealing. First, why go for the cheap stuff? Make your crime grand larceny. Did we pocket penny candy? No way. We went for the 5-cent stuff. Secondly, if you're going to be bad, be super bad. Both of us grabbed candy cigarettes and bubblegum cigars. And even though I didn't like them, I think I took one licorice pipe. In a short time, our pockets were full, and I had a good feeling. This was just the beginning. I knew I was going to get everything I ever wanted by stealing it. My life was going to be grand. When Clark and I headed toward the door, I felt frightened but also elated. We heard a deep voice call out to us from behind. Boys, you need to come with me. I about crapped my pants. Who was this man? Well, he was the store manager. Where did he come from? Well, we kept the one and only rule of stealing, watch the woman at the front counter. He was watching us from behind. Who would have thought? Well, not me, but I was only in the third grade. And not Clark, but he was only in the fourth grade. The store manager took us to the back room. He said, "Show me what's in your pockets." Very slowly, we emptied them on our desk. I'm not sure what I had. I know I liked big hunks, sugar daddies and sugar babies, charm sweet and sour pops, cherry heads, Abba Zabbas, atomic fireballs, and BB bats. I know Clark and I had candy cigarettes and bubblegum cigars, and I probably had one licorice pipe. The manager said, "I could call the police if I wanted." To me, that meant prison. My heart sunk. I shook in my boots. "Perhaps. All I have to do is call your parents. However, you have to promise me you will never, ever do it again." I don't know if I talked to my dad or my mom. I know I was scared and humiliated. When we got home, Clark was grounded by his parents, and I was grounded by my parents. Yet for me, something worse happened that day. In the time it takes to snap your fingers, all my dreams about my future evaporated. They went up in smoke. Remember, the night before, I concluded I was going to get everything I wanted by stealing it. What did I have to do to succeed? Watch the lady at the front counter. That was it. Then, when I had a little experience, I was going to teach my parents how to steal. Then I was going to teach my brothers and sisters how to steal. Then I was going to teach my grandparents, uncles and aunts and cousins how to steal. Everyone was going to thank me and love me forever, and our lives were going to be very good and very happy. Except, on my first attempt at stealing, I failed. I failed myself and I failed my family.
Doug, that is wonderful. I find commonality between us. I used to sit on the back porch of the church, skipping out on Sunday school, and me and my friend would sit there eating apples that we stole from the orchard right next door to the church.
Okay.
And so it was finally time to go into Walgreens and really steal something, but I just couldn't bring myself to stealing. Went over to the candy counter, and I picked up all of these old Bitto Honeys and Big Hunks and things like that, and I just couldn't bring myself to take anything. Because I couldn't, neither could my friend. And so we started walking out of the store, and we heard this voice that said, "Boys." And we were taken in to the manager's office, and he asked us to empty our pockets. And we didn't have anything in our pockets. He had wrongly accused us of stealing. And it really did teach me a lesson.
Yeah.
Don't steal. You just might get caught.
Right.
Our next presenter will be Richard Clegg. Welcome, Richard.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. It's fun.
What started you writing?
I suppose just expressing my thoughts and expressing my emotions and clearing some things from my mind, never with the real intent of others listening or hearing that. Freeing myself from certain things.
Would you like to introduce your piece and let us hear it?
Well, it's called The Weed in His Garden. I suppose it's about a childhood experience of maybe close to bullying, sort of. The Weed in His Garden. I wanted so to be like my summer brothers, tanned and athletic, that one sun-hot afternoon, as I made real my father's instructions I should weed the garden, I risked everything and stripped to the waist. I hoped no one would see my fragile, pale body until those few minutes in the sun had worked their wondrous magic, and it was bronze and sinewy like theirs. I'd never dared do this before. But the sizzling, pubescent desire to be something I wasn't trumped for those few pathetic minutes my own core of bookish reason. Within moments, I had lost it all for a very long time as Butch walked by. His gorgeous, tanned teenage muscles triumphed from that much too male for his years body. His mind, on the other hand, had necessitated he do fifth grade a second time. He spit at me the worst possible taunt. Sissy! It was just he and I, alone and at odds in the fiery ring of heat. Emboldened, he hurled his weapon not once, but twice as he paraded like a prize bull, glistening with sweat, past the reviewing stand of rutabagas and Swiss chard. I managed to mutter a stupid question in an attempt to ease somehow my devastation and to deflect somehow his attention from my soft oatmeal cookie dough body that the sun had not yet had time to bake to a delectable brown. He wasn't about to stoop so low as to talk with a homo, and responded to my question a third time with his brutally accurate evaluation of my masculinity. Sissy! When the goring was over, and Butch was well out of sight, tears fell like matador blood. Unseen by me, they softened a tiny bit of fiery-hot, iron-hard earth, moistening and encouraging a weed I had overlooked.
Richard, thank you for sharing that poignant story. I had a bully when I was in junior high school, and it was an awful experience. I wouldn't want anybody to go through bullying, and I encourage everybody to put a stop to it. Our next featured guest from the Gay Rights Group is Christine Ireland. Christine, tell us a little bit about you.
Well, I revere my dad as my first exemplar in the art of storytelling. And I never told stories. I always kept journals. But I turned those into what they call creative nonfiction. My dad called it embellishing.
Dave's an expert at embellishment.
Embellishments, yes. How long have you been a How long have you been a member of the group?
I think I have been participating in this particular group about 4 years, but I've been participating in the diversity writing series even longer than that.
You have a story for us today?
Yes.
I'd love to hear it.
And the title of this one is 95 Pennies and a Nickel. It was inspired by Martin Luther King Day. Today I ask myself, what is equal about our creation? We don't all have the same intellectual or physical capabilities. My brother Adam came to this earth disabled by the world's standards. He can't communicate in a traditional way. Some say he's not even aware of his surroundings. For his sake, I sometimes wish that were true. If he must be a prisoner of his body, wouldn't it be great if he could live his life unaware of his chains? However, logic pushes this fantasy out of my mind. You see, I hide candy bars in my room, never in the same place. And still, he finds them. My brother is aware, all right. His hugs are not a reflex action. I remember his baby blessing. 10 men placed one hand under him, the other resting on the shoulder of the man before, creating a circle. Although no longer in my line of vision, I could see Adam in my mind's eye. His face turned heavenward. Suddenly, the veil became thin. I could sense the presence of a loving being smiling down at him, and I took comfort in my father's words. Today, Adam is 9 years old. The ward has been praying and fasting on his behalf. His epileptic fits are more frequent, and my parents have authorized every medicinal and holistic treatment known to man. Scenes keep flashing through my mind, like the time I went with Dad to pick up Adam from school. My father went into a tirade. Why do you have a helmet on him? Can't you see you're singling him out, making him look strange to his classmates and their parents? It's a liability issue, she told my father. He's standing on concrete. I know Adam's PE teacher personally, and can honestly say she'd put herself in front of an oncoming Mack truck if it would save a child's life. I also understand my father's wish for Adam to become as integrated as possible. It's very hard for me to be torn at both ends by the complexities of my brother's situation. Now it seems all our struggles may be ending. He's in the hospital and nothing's working. Nothing is making him better. I don't have any answers. Still, I come back to the question of equality, all men being created equal. I believe that's true, and my only explanation. Some men are made up of four quarters, others 95 pennies and a nickel. None of us are the same, but we are all equal.
Wouldn't life be boring if we were all alike? Thank you for sharing, Christine.
Today, at the Story Mine, we're hearing from members of the gay rights group. And our next guest is Ked Kirkham. Ked, it's good to have you in the Story Mine with us.
Good morning. Thank you.
Tell us what you enjoy doing.
I have been with the writing group for about 3 years, and it sort of has been my permission to do some creative writing of my own, something I've been encouraged to do since junior high school, but sort of got the permission now to start writing. And poetry has come to the surface as just an absolute pleasure. My word turning has really become something I do often, and every day I try to think how I would say that in poetry.
So do you find when you do poetry that it just comes right into your head, or do you struggle with it?
The poem comes straight into my head. The words do not. So I have the poem, and I try to find the words that get it out.
Uh-huh.
That's how I envision that process.
Well, I enjoy poetry. I dabble in poetry myself.
Well, I hope you enjoy these today.
I'm sure I will. Would you like to share one with us?
My first one is an ode to my aging. There has been added unto me a great increase throughout my years, measured in times, in places, and by words and thoughts and you. Step following step with ease or halting, where I have faltered, believing I would fall, hands without reservation or doubt have appeared and pulled me through. Where I soared free and unfettered, it was then I flew with others. What heights I attained were not only my own, nor did I loose myself of the tethers. If my life must have had tally for success, or some report of counted steps, how many to reach my summit, what number to earn my rest? No one knows the length of his road, nor the vistas that his climb will make, the number of leaves hanging from the trees, nor stones beaten beneath his feet. Still, my journey will have its end, and at my harvest, there my reward will shine true, golden as the scythed sheaves for my having traveled this way with you.
Ked, that was short and sweet and beautifully crafted.
If you can't laugh at yourself, you're taking yourself far too seriously. So on the lighter side, we have a group of individuals that are going to be performing a radio play. Kelly Albrecht is the author of this play, and all the other members that are with us today will be helping out in this performance.
We're very excited to hear it. Let's get right into it.
Thank you. This is called It's Just Dreadful. It is Tuesday morning. Jim and his darling wife, both middle age, are preparing for the morning. Coffee is brewing. The decor is 1950s. It is black and white. Jim buttons his shirt and puts on his tie.
Darling, I need to work late at the office tonight with Frank from accounting.
That's fine, dear.
What is it, darling? Something seems to be bothering you this morning. Is it because I'm working late?
Oh, it's nothing, Jim, dear. You should eat your breakfast or you'll be late to work.
Oh, come now, darling. Don't start that this morning. Tell me, what's on your mind?
It's just that, well, I talked to Joan on the phone this morning, and she's told me that...
Go on. She told you what?
She told me that her oldest son came out to her last night.
You mean as a...
Yes.
A homosexual?
Yes.
Oh, that is just dreadful news, darling. Just dreadful. But it can't be all that bad now, can it, darling?
It's just that...
It's just what?
Well, I'm afraid, Jim, dear.
Afraid? Afraid of what, darling? Surely nothing like that could ever happen to our children. I just know it.
Oh, I know, Jim, dear. That's not what I'm afraid of.
All right, darling. You spilled the coffee. Enough with this nonsense. Tell me, what's bothering you?
I'm frightened because gays are the biggest threat to our country.
Seriously? Now, darling, listen to yourself. Have you read the newspaper lately? Earthquakes, floods, corrupt bankers, poverty. We're in the middle of a war. The homosexuals have nothing to do with any of that.
Oh, Jim, you don't understand. It's just awful and frightening. They're slowly taking over our way of life.
Honey, it can't be all that bad. They can't possibly take over everything. All right, now who could that possibly be? Oh, I guess I should answer the door. Ah! Oh, it's zombies, and the zombies are in color. They're obviously homosexual zombies, darling. That one grabbed my behind.
Oh, Jim, dear, hold me, hold me.
I'm so sorry, darling. I should have listened to you.
Oh, Jim, dear, they're going to destroy our marriage.
Well, Kathy, it looks like all of our time has been eaten up. Wendy. We want to thank Christine Ireland, Ked Kirkham, Richard Clegg, Apio Hunter, Doug Woodall, and Kelly Albrecht, members of the Gay Rights Group. Here at the Story Mine, we've been asking people to share their stories. And one of the great advantages to hearing people's stories is that you develop an empathy within yourself for their trials and their stories.
If you have stories that you'd like to share with us here at the Story Mine, please contact us at thestorymine@gmail.com.
You never know what stories can be found deep underground in the Story Mine.
Goodbye.